Today is a significant day. One, it is Deepam. It is the day in the year when a fire is lit atop Arunachala Mountain, which is considered to be Lord Shiva himself. Anyone drawn to the path of knowledge would, I think, like being there around this holy mountain and the Ramana Maharshi Ashram. I say would like being there as a caveat, because it is not necessary that it benefits everyone. This may sound surprising, but Lakshmana Swami had said that if there is not sufficient sattva, that person may not do well next to the mountain. May not. Yet I find that I have an optimistic view about this, because I am reminded of two things. One is when Maharaj was having his satsang, a foreigner walked in, didn't like what he saw, and left. And Maharaj replied to his audience, "Too late. The fact that he has come here and set foot in this space means that sooner or later the seed will sprout. Sooner or later the seed will sprout." My own experience of Arunachala, the first time I visited it, which was around the year 2000, I ran away because I could not handle the material dimension of the space, the crowd, the noise, the dirt. I was overwhelmed by it. And I swore that I'd never go back there. And I've been going back there now for 23 years. So our view is extremely limited about things. Extremely limited. If we remember this, that whatever our opinion about someone or something that happens to us is based on a very limited view, then there's an opening, a receptivity, that there's a larger force at play. Something that my puny intellect cannot possibly comprehend, though it thinks it knows best. If we have this in our minds every time we find we are trying to win an argument, or force our opinion on someone else, we will find that we are now witnessing life more and more. We are judging life less and less. We are judging people less and less. We are judging events that transpire in our lives less and less. And we are in the zone which our ancestors and rishis called Sakshi Bhav, witness consciousness. And that is the fire of knowledge. It burns away illusion and delusion. But as Maharaj said, one has to be prepared because it will burn the entire house down. And are you prepared for it? What does that mean? All your cherished beliefs, all your finger pointing, will be burned to ash. The ego will not be able to play that game anymore. You did this to me. When this garbage is evicted from the thinking mind, this garbage of hatred, jealousy, pride, arrogance, resentments, ill will, the list goes on. When all this is evicted from the mind, it means that my thinking mind, which was obsessed with me and my story and my drama of life, and I must win. When that obsession goes, what is left? Which Maharaj pointed to relentlessly, abiding in the I am. Abiding in your being. Now, imagine trying to abide in your being as a sadhana, but your mind is full of crap. The churn is going on all the time in your mind. But no, the sadhana is I must abide in my being. Whereas what the teachings do, if followed, is they clear out the garbage of the thinking mind. So you find you are no longer repeating these patterns of thinking like you were before. And because the thinking mind is disengaged, abiding in being is natural. And that abiding in being means honoring whatever shows up in front of you. It could be a person you have a history with. A history of action reaction. Aage aja. It could be a moment that brings forth news which is not good. But this teaching brings about a total acceptance of what is. So if the person who has been pushing my buttons all the time comes before me, while the past conditioning is there, I now see that we all have some good points and some bad points. I can see that this person in front of me is playing out their script the way God designed it. It's really nothing to do with me, though it appears that way. It appears that way. And I find when that person leaves my space, no matter the pain they have caused me, I truly wish them well. Because I know we all have been shaped by our conditioning, our genetics, our nature, over which no one had any control. This is called seeing God in everyone. It's nothing esoteric. That is why Maharaj would say, understanding is all, full stop. Understanding is all. That is the fire of knowledge. That is the sun. The sun is above the pairs of opposites, so to speak. It does not choose whom to shine its light on. You could be anyone. That light is the light of being. Someone gifted me this book and I found two passages quite interesting. This is by Arthur Osborne and it's called Ramana Maharshi and the Path of Self-Knowledge. So there was a young boy called Humphreys who was gifted with enormous powers. Even before he met Bhagwan. And then Bhagwan said, please get off all this. And he had a very deep understanding. He met Bhagwan a few times and then went his way. So he had written a synopsis of the teaching. Which it says here, a synopsis that he sent to a friend in English was published later in the International Psychic Gazette and remains an excellent presentation of the teaching. And this passage, from this point begins the work of the practice of this mental comprehension, and all it amounts to is the breaking of a habit. The breaking of a habit, which basically means the past conditioning. One has to cease calling things things and must call them God. And instead of thinking them to be things, must know them to be God. Instead of imagining existence to be the only thing possible, one must realize that this existence is only the creation of the mind. So what happens when we stop calling things things? This is precisely it. So so far I have labeled everyone in my life as per the roles they play. Family, stranger, beggar, colleague, the ones I love a lot, the ones I love a little less, and the ones I love the least. I am calling things, things. But when I start seeing that the same consciousness animates the beggar who comes up to me, as well as my parent, then a shift happens. When I find I am as receptive to a person I've just met as I am to a very close friend, then a shift happens. That shift is the shift from my relationship with people to my relationship with God. Because I am now seeing the one behind the many. When I have the courage to accept that the person who has troubled me the most in my life is created by the force that created me, then I know that the teachings have been taken to heart. The rest is all theory. Asking people which states of samadhi they have experienced, how many hours of sadhana they do in a day. But when by and by, my relationship with people, my relationship with what happens to me in my life, and my relationship with myself is one of a deep acceptance and peace, then I know that represents my relationship with God. And in that process, the power of satsang is underestimated. You see, satsang, which is a gathering of truth, is a bit different from other gatherings, like social gatherings, dinners, meetings. Because the gathering is for the truth, not something that adds to me, not something that helps me navigate life socially, financially, whatever it may be. Now all that is kept aside. Something has pulled someone to satsang. Satsang can be any form. One is this kind of a form. Satsang can be bhajan, kirtan, whatever it may be. Singing the praise of God. The value is that our conditioning is so hardwired from childhood. So hardwired that, as my teacher would say, the ego needs a constant hammering in order to break the shell. Constant. Put, 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 put. That is why when he was asked, someone said, I know everything you say, yet I find myself coming again and again and again. Does it mean I haven't understood? And he said, no. It is just like your favorite song. You want to listen to it again and again and again. That's it. That happens two ways. One is physically, and the other is the satsang which happens internally. Which means if there's a remembrance of the teachings, that is satsang. If I see events in my life through this lens now, that is satsang, because I am keeping the company of truth. There was this famous story of this man who visited Bhagwan for 100 days and felt he was not benefiting. Let me see if I can find it. Yeah. For 100 days he stayed away, and then the thought came to him, how am I better for not seeing Bhagwan? So he went. Bhagwan met him at the entrance to Skandashram and greeted him with this question, how are you better for not visiting me? He then spoke to him of the importance and potency of satsang. Even though the disciple did not perceive the effect it was having on him, or see any improvement in himself, Bhagwan compared it to a mother feeding her child during its sleep at night, so that next day the child thinks it took no food, although she knows it did, and in fact the food sustains it. Like I said, we don't know. We don't know. You're too cramped up there. So when we start trusting when things go wrong in our life, that, you know, we don't know. We just don't know. Then we are just dealing with the situation at hand without the mind spinning its stories. Someone does something repeatedly, I don't know. It is what it is. It is what it is. Not what it should be, not what it could be, not what it should have been or could have been. Otherwise, you'll find that the years are ticking by and you're still living in the shoulds and coulds and woulds, and not realizing that there's lesser time on this planet for you. That happens. And then till the last days, you'll be carrying this dialogue of should, could, and would. If I had done that, if they had done that, that is the mantra. Might as well give up that game now, so that at least you are available for yourself to for the rest of your life. Today is also, I'm reminded of the anniversary of the terror attacks in Mumbai, which happened in 2008, I think, 2008. And I know two people, a father and his daughter, who lost their lives in that attack. They were from America. They were part of a spiritual group who were visiting Mumbai at the time and whose talks we had helped organize. The master of that group himself is no more now, Master Charles Cannon. We knew him very well. Alan was the vice president of Synchronicity. And he made a few trips to Mumbai. He loved India. The joy he would get having Pani Puri and Bhel Puri on the streets was unparalleled. So, Alan would come to my office and work from there in the day and then go about organizing things for his group and his master and all that. So, whenever I would have a tea break, I would call him. I would send for him and he would come and have chai with me in the office. Happened about two times a day at least. Alan was with Maharishi Mahesh Yogi before coming to Synchronicity. And he was a Vedic astrologer. He had studied Vedic astrology very deeply. People used to consult him. And I remember that was the time I had written an essay for my guru's 90th birthday. I wrote it for myself, what I thought was the core of the teaching. And then I sent it to a magazine, a spiritual magazine called Life Positive. I sent it to the editor because I knew her. I knew she wasn't very fond of Ramesh's teachings, but that didn't stop me. And I sent it with the hope that maybe she will like it and she will carry it in the magazine. And that is precisely what happened. She called me up, Suma called me up, said, "Great article, we are carrying it." So I presented that magazine to my teacher. And he said, "That is very well written, but why don't you expand a bit on it and make a small book of it?" That is how my first book came out. Now, while this was happening, Alan asked me for my birth details. So I gave it. And he went to his laptop, did tick, 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 came back in half an hour, and he said, you know what? You will be writing many books. And I laughed. I said, Alan, you're way off the mark. Now, 15 years later, he was right. So be careful when you laugh. And Alan, once we were walking, I think, somewhere in Churchgate, and he said, you know, Gautam, my wish is to die in India. My wish is to die in India. And he got his wish. In a brutal way. In a brutal way. And his daughter was next to him. 15 years old, Naomi. Instant death. Hand of destiny. Then, some months later, we had published this called Nan Umriger. Nan Umriger used to, Nan Umriger's story is that her son was a very famous jockey. He was winning all the races, and he was, I think, one short of a win when he fell from his horse and died. And then through a series of events, Carl, who was now in the spirit realm, started communicating with his mother, Nan, and told Nan that I am now with a guru. And she said, Guru, we are Parsis. What guru? Guru is all this. He said, I am with a guru, Meher Baba. So Nan wrote a book called Sounds of Silence on this journey of hers from an absolutely clueless Parsi mother to this realm. Now, Nan sent me a message. Maybe 3 months after Alan and Naomi passed on. 3-4 months, I would say. And in that, Alan says to me that I don't want to get into the hows and whys and what happened. I just want to let you know there was no pain and suffering. And there's the rest of the letter, which I am producing in my next book. So we don't know. Now, George, this is your domain, since you have experience with being able to communicate with other realms. But this is the beauty of life. You know, sometimes someone would ask Ramesh, because he was this quintessential Advaita master, and he was not into discussing past lives, future lives, other realms. He felt it was all conceptual and best to deal with this life and a lot in this life. Yet, at the same time, someone else asked him if he believed in all this, and his answer was, if consciousness is all there is, anything is possible. So you see, the teacher is not going to be dogmatic and rigid. What arises spontaneously arises. And more importantly, the teacher or guru is not addressing the question, but rather the questioner. What is meant to come for that person comes. But it was absolutely beautiful, this message, the sharing which came. And how it works, because through Nan's works, she introduced her master, Meher Baba, to thousands of people. Now, mind you, she received bouquets as well as brickbats. Oh, you should not indulge in these things and all that stuff. But this lady, she followed her guidance and did what she felt was right. She was not a fool. So she diligently, over, I think, 2 decades, did what she could. Amazing service. And Naomi was such a quiet girl. She was the only child in the group, so everyone's attention was on her. But when she would come here, she would not open her mouth. She would sit quietly. Radiant face. I remember her face was so radiant, so beautiful. And their master, Charles Cannon, revered my mother. So they really looked up to my mother. And before leaving this place, Naomi asked my mother, touched her feet and said, "Am I spiritual?" Amazing.
What could have been your mother's answer to me? I really like
it. My mother's answer was what most of us have read. I don't know who it is ascribed to initially. She told her that you are a spiritual being having a human experience. That is why I say, pay attention to the silent ones. They have much to offer you in that silence. Here today, gone tomorrow. But we act as if we will live forever and carry our grudges with us, our resentments. Anyone wants to share anything or ask anything?
I have a question. So I've been listening to Rameshji and you on YouTube. Live in the US. So someone shared one of your scripts of destiny, and that is how the journey started. Many gurus I met, and since last 25 years, met so many people and all that. Your teachings have given me peace. So I realized that I have to have deep grooves of the teaching. So, because I just love it. That is the way I want to live my life. Very calm and peaceful. So now what happens, because I listen to it so often, that when events happen, as soon as the drama starts or any emotion arises, the teaching comes. It's a script. It's so funny. The tear stops here. And it's totally like Gnata Bhav ke, where am I going? But why it doesn't happen before or as soon as it starts? It happens in couple after couple minutes or so. I'm very blessed that it comes.
Absolutely.
I'm so blessed that it comes. And just loving it. But I want it even closer, closer.
Of course, because even that much has given you so much relief.
Absolutely.
And that is because it doesn't come immediately for one reason. There's years and years and years of conditioning which is hardwired. It's going to take time. You see, the teaching is like fresh conditioning. It really appeals to you. It makes sense. Now the thing is, in daily living, it must be total. But it takes time because the old conditioning has to be overridden. Or you may find sometimes it comes immediately, other times it doesn't. Even that can happen. Because then our core issues are going to take longer to get resolved.
And in that time, at that time, with the very close family members, my mind keeps saying, it's script. And the ego keeps saying, should not have done whatever. The, you know, chatter keeps on going. And the other side keeps on saying, it's a script. So you are absolutely right. Even though the script part keeps coming, the other part is not ready to give in.
Yes.
So that
it's
is
a habit.
It's a habit.
But then, one thing can happen, like in Sunil's case, once he mentioned that a sibling you don't get along with, suppose, for a long time, you may just find yourself, hey, let's go and have a chai, which earlier you may not have. You see, because now there's an opening that you realize the script is there, you realize your own script is going on, but now something has changed. That there is something to this relationship beyond our scripts. The person is here, I am here. Let me enjoy the person's good points. And not just that, let me allow this person to express themselves the way they are. And I have my chai and enjoy it. Isn't it?
True, absolutely.
And when I cannot just give in, I mean, sometimes, that also, then I tell myself, okay, that is also scripted.
Yeah.
So then it becomes so calming. Day passes by. So if I keep listening to Rameshji or you or whomever, like, I mean, both of you, more and more and more and more will give me what I am looking for, or that is also scripted?
It is also scripted. Someone may listen to this once and doesn't need to listen to it all the time. Someone may need... But there's one important thing here. Listen only if you enjoy listening.
Oh, absolutely.
Don't do it out of like, I need a result, I need a goal, so this is my tapasya.
No.
And I hate listening to this guy, but chalo, ye bhi karna hai.
No, every time I listen, I find 3-4 such powerful sentences that just go so deep within.
What is your name?
Shilpa.
Shilpa, I went for 10 years to my teacher and I wasn't really attentively listening, honestly. But destiny, when I met him, after a month or so, I knew I'd be there till his last breath. Now, he was 83 when I met him. He passed away at 92. At 83, I had no idea I would be with him for over 9 years. But even though I was not listening attentively, at least that's what I thought, I would pick up things in each satsang.